Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be reading, I'm the Last Survivor of a Ghost Ship, the Coldwater Marlin. This is by Strange Accounts from Reddit. I hope you enjoy this story, and a huge shout out to my patrons for helping make this episode possible. Let's get started. I've been staring at this blank page for hours. I don't know why I feel compelled to write it all down. It's not like anyone will believe me. Hell, I wouldn't believe me. Trauma-induced illusions, survivor's guilt, that's what they'll call it. Whatever cute little label they slap on this madness, it doesn't matter. I know what I saw, and I know it wasn't just in my head. I worked aboard the Coldwater Marlin for 5 seasons. 5 miserable winters hauling sets in the North Atlantic. A place so cold it chews through layers of gear like it's nothing. You don't work on a boat like the Marlin because you want to. You work there because you've got nowhere else to go. We were a rough lot. Guys with bad habits, bad luck, or both. Drunks, debtors, and drifters. Hal Foster, the captain, once said that the Marlin didn't run on diesel. It ran on desperation. He wasn't wrong. We even earned the reputation as the Foster kids. Ask around and they'll tell you why. They'd say, ain't no other daddy wants them. They weren't wrong, but none of us cared about that all that much. We had a job and the captain treated us right. That being said, the ship itself was an old beast, rusted at the seams, groaning like an arthritic old man with every swell. Inside, it was worse. The walls were streaked with salt and grease, and the air smelled like rotting fish and diesel fumes. Everything felt damp, like the ocean had already started claiming her. Looking back, maybe it had. We'd pushed farther north than usual on that trip, chasing rumors of a dense shoal that would make the cold and misery worth it. Hal was restless this go-round. He spent his time chain-smoking in his cabin and muttering over the charts. Something about this run felt off, but we ignored it. You should never ignore it. The nights heading up there were the worst. Out in the open sea, the darkness comes alive. The sea whispers and howls, and the cold seems to rub up against you, searching for cracks to slip through. And sometimes, if you stare out at the dark water too long, you start seeing shapes. Things that move too fast to be fish. I always told myself it was just exhaustion. You end up telling yourself a lot of things out there. But all that was before we found her. It was just another haul at first. The winches screamed as the nets came up, the load heavier than expected. The guys were already cracking jokes about a big payday. Then Carlos froze. What the hell's that? I didn't see it at first, just a writhing mass of fish scales and seaweed. But then something shifted, and I saw her. Pale color, too smooth, no shimmer. Human skin. She was small, no older than 8. Her body tangled in the net. Her lips were sewn shut with rusted fishing wire and iron fishing hooks. The flesh was swollen and raw. It wasn't the work of a surgeon. It was crude, violent, and old. And yet she was alive. Her chest rose and fell in shallow breaths. Her hair clung to her face, matted with seaweed. But her eyes were the worst. Wide open, staring but seeing nothing. The same look as the mountain of fish pressed against her. "Pull her out!" Hal barked over the intercom. But his voice cracked, a sound I'd never heard from him before. Carlos and Jake hesitated, then reached into the net, their hands slick with fish slime. They laid her softly on the deck like she might shatter, but she didn't move. "What do we do?" Jake's voice shook. He looked to Hal, but Hal was just standing in the wheelhouse staring through the glass. Carlos didn't wait for an answer. "We can't leave her like this," he said, pulling out his knife. I wanted to stop him. I wanted to shout at him to stop and think. That whatever was going on here wasn't possible. But instead I just stood there and watched as he began cutting the wire. The girl didn't flinch, didn't make a sound. When the last piece came free, her lips parted, blood trickling down her chin. Then she opened her mouth. It wasn't a scream. It wasn't a word. It was a drone, a low and humming. A noise that seemed to crawl into your ears and settle inside your skull. It wasn't loud, but it filled the air, vibrating in your bones, thrumming in your chest. Carlos stumbled back, clutching his ears. "What is?" he started to say, but he didn't finish. He turned and walked straight to the edge of the deck, I didn't understand what was happening. None of us did. Not until Carlos climbed over the railing and jumped. God help me, I didn't try to save him. None of us did. The splash stole the silence. Then the girl sat up, her lips moving, the note growing louder. She crossed her legs and tilted her head like she was singing a lullaby for her classroom. I could still hear it sometimes. The song, I mean. It wasn't just a note. It was something profound. Something that scratched its way into your brain and dug its claws in. The memories are coming back like a flood now, overwhelming me, choking me with details and visions. I can't write this fast enough. Hal, I wish we just tossed her back. Sorry, this is hard to write. I'll keep going. So Carlos was the first to go, but he wasn't the last. After he jumped, we just stood there, dumbstruck, staring at the dark water where he disappeared. It was Will who broke the silence, running to the edge, shouting, "Carlos!" His voice was raw. He bolted to the railing, leaning so far over I thought he'd fall too. "Carlos, get back to the surface! We'll toss a line!" He scouted over the railing, scanning the waves, but there was nothing. No sign of him, no thrashing, nothing but the endless churn of the sea. The girl didn't move. She just sat there on the deck, dripping wet, her head tilted slightly to one side like she was listening to something in her ear. Her lips were moving, but that song, God, that song, it wasn't just in the air. It was in us, oscillating our teeth, buzzing behind our eyes. "Shut her up," Hal's voice cracked over the intercom. He was still in the wheelhouse, watching everything but not coming down. "Get her to stop." Jake was the one who went for her. Big, gruff Jake, who never flinched at anything, stomped right up to the girl. "All right, that's enough," he bellowed. He grabbed her by the shoulders, shaking her like she was a misbehaving kid. "Hey, shut up! Stop!" She didn't even look at him. Her eyes were blank, unfocused, like she wasn't really there. The sound kept coming, growing louder, sharper, like it was burrowing into her skulls. Jake's grip loosened and he stumbled back, clutching his head. "Make it stop," he muttered, his voice cracking. "Make it stop, make it stop." And then he turned, slamming his head into the steel wall of the cabin. Once, twice, three times. The wet, sickening crunch of bone and flesh made me want to gag, but I couldn't look away. Blood smeared the wall in streaks, but Jake didn't stop until he collapsed to the deck, his face unrecognizable, his head concaved. That's when the real panic set in for us. Will bolted for the door to the crew quarters, screaming something incoherent. Danny, the youngest of us, just stood there, shaking, tears streaming down his face. "What's happening?" he kept whispering like a prayer, like someone was going to answer him. The hum pulsed, vibrating through the deck beneath my feet. I felt drawn to the edge, my legs carrying me closer, unbidden, shaking like rubber. I don't know how I stayed upright. Maybe it was shock, or maybe some part of me was already detached, already giving up. I don't know. All I know is that the sound was getting louder and more insistent, more melodic. I looked over the railing and that's when I saw them. At first I thought it was debris, bits of nets and waste bobbing in the waves. But then I saw their faces. Children's heads, pale, bloated, their eyes wide and glassy, dozens of them, floating just beneath the surface, their mouths moving in time with the girl's song, opening and closing, slowly layering their voices in perfect synchronization, a whole choir. My legs finally gave out. I collapsed to the deck, clawing at the steel beneath me to keep from sliding forward, to keep me from falling into the water with them. "Don't listen to the kids," I screamed, though my voice barely sounded like mine. Will came running back, holding his head like he was trying to keep it from splitting open. "They're in my head," he sobbed, his voice high and broken. "I can hear them. I can hear." He grabbed a knife from the workstation, plunged it into his own throat. The blood sprayed in a hot, sticky arc, and he collapsed beside Jake's body, twitching as the life drained out of him. The girl finally stood up. Her movements were jerky, unnatural, almost thrashing. Her lips parted wider and the sound shifted, becoming something more rhythmic, more euphoric. It hurt to hear it, but it was beautiful. Danny went next. He just walked past me, silent, tears still streaming down his face. He slipped over Will's blood, leaving a long smear of a red boot print. He straightened himself and continued. He just kept walking. He kept walking until he climbed right over the railing and stepped off. No hesitation, no struggle. Just gone. And the ocean he fell into wasn't quiet anymore. It erupted. The following wave sounded like a spasm of exploding glass, like a thousand fish breaking the surface all at once. Danny didn't make a sound, but the ocean was roaring. I don't remember deciding to move, but I found myself running into the cabin. I knew I needed to find something to cover my ears. The corridors of the ship felt tighter than usual, closing in on me as the chorus echoed off the steel walls. I grabbed anything I could find. Rags, duct tape, anything to stuff in my ears. I kept winding the tape over my head until my ears bled. Then I stepped back out onto the deck to see if there was anyone I could help. And I wish I didn't. Off near the bow of the ship, I saw two deckhands engaging with each other, Matt and Reynolds. Matt was standing over Ray with a wrench in his hand. He swung down. The crack was a sickeningly wet thud, almost hollow. I watched as Matt raised the wrench again. Another twist of his wrist brought the metal tool down again and again and again, until the wrench was hitting more deck than bone. I couldn't hear him, but it looked like Matt was screaming. I turned and darted back towards the stern. I found Stanley and Greg huddled together near the entrance to the wheelhouse. They'd stuffed their ears too, and we shared a look that didn't need words. I pointed to the door, asking them to open it, but they shook their heads. Stanley motioned towards the observation window above us. It was painted red. Flickers of sparks and flames illuminated what should have been the control system. I looked back at the men. Greg made a pistol gesture with his hand, pointed at his temple, then mimicked firing a shot. Captain Foster was gone. I slumped down next to the both of them. The song was piercing right through our ear protection. We knew we'd crack soon. We were just picking straws to see who'd end up being first. As it turns out, it'd be Stanley. He ripped the tape out of his ears, screaming that he couldn't take it anymore and ran for the edge. Greg tried to stop him, but he couldn't run as fast. I didn't even try. I couldn't. I watched Greg jump in after him. Instead of joining them, I ended up walking across the deck towards the cold storage containers. There were 20 men aboard the Marlin when we started our trip. By now, a good handful had jumped, but the ones still aboard, the ones that I could see, were little more than rapidly freezing masses of meat plastered against cold steel. Matt was also missing from the last place I saw him. Ray was too, though chunks of Ray were stuck to the railing, thrown overboard like a feed bucket. As I walked past the open door to the lower levels, I could vaguely hear the girl's melody echo out through my ear protection. I wondered if Matt went down there with her, or if there were half a dozen other Matts brutalizing each other in those cramped corridors. I didn't want to envision what was going on down there, but I did. I ended up barricading myself in one of the shipping containers. I don't know how long I stayed there for. Days, weeks, time lost all meaning. All I could hear was the faint hum of her song, always there pleading for me to step out. And then, all at once, it stopped. When they finally found me, I didn't recognize them at first. I was slumped in the corner of the shipping container, curled into myself like a frightened animal. The banging on the steel door was distant, muffled. And for a moment, I thought it was her, that she'd come back, that the song would start again and drag me down like it had the others. But it wasn't her. When the door creaked open, I blinked against the sudden light. Voices filtered in, real voices, not the broken voices of dead deckhands that I had grown accustomed to. They were always accusing me, always asking why I didn't jump ship with them, asking why the life of one dreg was worth more than the life of the next dreg, and the hardest one, asking me why she let me go. A man in a bright orange winter rain suit knelt in front of me, his gloved hand on my shoulder. "You're safe now," he said, his tone gentle, but I saw the way he looked at me, the way his eyes flicked over my fluid-stained clothes, my emaciated figure, and my sunken face. He wasn't sure what he'd found. They pulled me out of the container and onto their vessel, the Arctic Dawn. The air was frigid, the sky overcast, the sea a vast, gray expanse stretching toward the horizon. I watched as the cold water Marlin was drifting silently behind us. its once busy deck now lifeless and slick with frozen blood. I didn't say much at first. I couldn't. My throat was raw. My mind was a fractured mess. They gave me blankets, water, and something hot to drink. I remember the captain, a middle-aged man with a beaten-down face and kind eyes, asking me questions. What happened? Where was my crew? And how long I had been out there? I couldn't answer. How do you explain something like this? How do you tell someone that the ocean swallowed 20 men because of a little girl with sewn shut lips? Eventually, they stopped asking. Maybe they thought I was in shock. Maybe they just didn't want to know. As the hours passed, I started to piece together fragments of what they told me. The Marlin had been spotting drifting aimlessly, its radio silent, its engines dead. The crew of the Arctic Dawn boarded her, expecting to find mechanical trouble or a stranded crew. Instead, they found nothing, just blood on the deck, some personal belongings scattered in the cabins, and me locked in that container. No bodies, no signs of struggle beyond the blood. Eventually, I tried to tell them about her, the girl, the song, the heads in the water, but the words sounded ridiculous even to me. The captain listened quietly, his expression unreadable, but I could see the doubt creeping into his eyes. That night, after I said my piece, I sat alone in the galley. I overheard the other crewmates talking. They didn't know I could hear them. "Maybe he snapped," one of them said. "Killed the others and lost it." "That doesn't explain the blood," another replied. "There's too much of it for just one man. No way one man can cause that type of a mess." "Could have been pirates," someone else suggested. But the words hung in the air, hollow. "Pirates don't leave a ship untouched, and if someone goes missing, there'd be a ransom already in the works." When the captain walked in, the conversation stopped. He looked at me and nodded, but his expression said everything. I tried to sleep that night, but every time I closed my eyes, I saw their faces. Carlo stepping off the deck, Jake's skull caving in against the wall, Danny's vacant stare as he walked into the sea, and her, always her, that blank expression, those dark, unblinking eyes. In the early hours of the morning, I heard it again, faint, almost imperceptible, like a hum carried on the wind. I bolted upright, my heart hammering in my chest. I ran to the deck, desperate to convince myself it wasn't real. The ocean was still, eerily calm under the gray light of dawn. But I saw something, a ripple, a flicker of movement just beneath the surface. And then they appeared, the heads. Not dozens this time, but hundreds, bobbing silently in the water, their mouths opening and closing in perfect rhythm. I backed away trembling, but I couldn't look away. Their eyes locked onto mine, and I felt it again. That pull, that irresistible urge to join them. I screamed for the others, but by the time they came, the water was empty. Just waves and wind and the endless gray horizon. They think I'm crazy. And maybe I am. But I know what I saw. And I know it's not over. That's the end of this story. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you're on YouTube, I'd really appreciate it if you liked the video and leave me your thoughts in the comments. Love interacting with you all. If you're on Spotify, because I know that's where a lot of you listen, well, I'll maybe follow for more. And, you can let me know your thoughts there too, actually. I hope you appreciated the story. I hope you liked it. Huge shout out once again to my patrons for helping make this episode possible. If you'd like to support this channel even more than just engaging and sharing it around, well, there's a Patreon available. I really appreciate all your generosities. And if you'd like to come hang out and chat with the rest of the crew, come to Discord. It's pretty chill. Won't keep you up too late. So I hope you enjoyed yourself here. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in the next one.